very many more people in the room. But welcome. My name is Barbara Cudiel. I'm a faculty member in the departments of English and Critical Race, Gender, Sexuality Studies. And just a couple of announcements before we begin. There's sign-up attendance sheet for my classes on the table outside. There's other sign-up sheets out there, probably for the dialogue on race, right? As well as other materials. There's copies of Javier's book being sold also right outside the room by Northtown Books, okay? So I'm gonna begin. I'm gonna introduce Javier Zamora, our guest poet for today. Today's reading is sponsored by the English Department's Visiting Writers Series, and also it's part of the Campus Dialogue on Race. Javier Zamora was born in La Herradura, El Salvador, in 1990. His father fled El Salvador when he was a year old, and his mother when he was about to turn five. Both parents' migrations were caused by the U.S.-funded Salvadoran Civil War. In 1999, Javier migrated through Guatemala, Mexico, and eventually the Sonoran Desert. After a coyote abandoned his group in Oaxaca, Javier managed to make it to Arizona with the aid of other migrants. His book, Unaccompanied, published this year by Copper Canyon Press, explores how immigration and the Civil War have impacted his family. Zamora is a 2016 to 2018 Wallace Stegner Fellow at Stanford University, and is a 2016 Ruth Lilly Dorothy Sargent Rosenberg Poetry Fellow. He holds fellowships from Canto Mundo, Colgate University, McDowell, Macondo, and the National Endowment for the Arts, and IATO. In 2016, Barnes & Noble granted him the Writers for Writers Award for his work in the Undocu Poets campaign. So join me in welcoming Javier Zamora.
Thank you all for being here. Dang, it's a packed house. Gracias, Barbara, for inviting me. And thank you all for reading the book and for listening today. And before I begin, I just want to honor the Miyot and the Yurok people, which is the land where we're standing on right now. And especially, you know, today, that is Dia de los Difuntos, Dia de los Muertos. So, gracias. And I'll read about 20, then 20 for Q&A. So, I'll start. Tu abuelita Nelly. This is my 14th time pressing roses in fake passports. For each year, I haven't climbed Marañón trees. I'm sorry I've lied about where I was born. Today, this country chose its first black president. Maybe he changes things. I've told mom I don't want to have to choose to get married. You understand. Abuelita, I can't go back and return. There's no path to papers. I've got nothing left but dreams where I'm the parakeet nest on the flor de fuego, the paper boats we made when streets flooded, or toys I buried by the foxtail ferns. Do you know the ferns I mean? The ones we planted the first birthday without my parents. I'll never be a citizen. I'll never scrub clothes with pumice stones over the big cement tub under the almond trees. Last time you called, you said, my old friends think that now I'm from some town between this bay and Aristero, and that I'm a coconut, brown on the outside, white inside. Abuelita, please forgive me, but tell them they don't know shit. And that's to my grandma, who I haven't seen since I left the country back when I was 1999. And there's a lot of stuff still going on in my country from 1980, 1992, there was a civil war. And that's when my family fled, but the war is still going on. You know, now we have a gang war over there, and the murder rate, it's higher than it was during a quote-unquote civil war. And I'll read a poem from the war section. What? You're reading alone? 23. Dancing in buses. So it's a dance. Pretend a boombox blasts over your shoulder. Raise your hands in the air. Twist them as if picking lines. Look to the right as if crossing streets. Look to the left slowly as if balancing orange baskets. Bend as if picking cotton. Do the rump. Straighten up as if dropping firewood. Rake. Do the rake. Sweep. Do the sweep. Do the pupusa clap. Finger dough clumps clap. Do the horchata scoop. Your hands a ladle. Scoop. Reach and scoop. Now duck. They're shooting. Duck under the seat and don't breathe. Hands behind your head. Drop down. Look at the ground. Roll over. Face the mouth of the barrel. Do the protect face with hand. Don't scream. Do you want me to say the page numbers? That's cool. This never happened. Let's stay with the war poems. 28 and 29. Disappeared. Hold these names responsible. Arena, Roberto Dawison, Escuadrones de la Muerte, Las Fuerzas Armadas, Batallón Atlacaton, La Guardia Civil, Escuela de las Americas, also known as Fort Benning or Western Hemisphere Institute for Security Cooperation, Batallón Atonal, Bush Sr., Ronald Reagan, Batallón Ramón Belloso, Alliance for Progress, U.S. Aid, Batallón Eusebio Bracamonte, CIA, Jimmy Carter, Batallón Manuel José Arce, the 14 Families, Donald Trump, President Obama, the FBI, DEA, Rooftop.
And we've been asked if everyone could just shimmy forward.
Because the people outside can't hear. I was like, y'all coming at me and
shit. Thank you very much. Sorry, it's closer.
That looks, yeah, that looks cool. Everybody good? Get in. All right. Now 21. And this one's based off of a nightmare that I had, a recurring nightmare. And I think that's what intergenerational trauma is. You know, I didn't live through this shit, but it comes back. In the dreams. The pier of La Herradura. When I sleep, I see a child hidden between the legs of a scarred man. Their sunburned backs sweat cold air. The child faces me, and the pier's thatched roof swallows the moon cut by the clouds behind them. Sometimes, they're on the same roof, wearing handkerchiefs, and uniformed men surround them. I mistake bullet casings for cormorant beaks diving till water churns the color of sunsets. Stained barnacles line the pier, and I can't see who's face down on the boat's painted crimson. Once I heard the man, alive and still on the roof, say, today for you, tomorrow for me. There's a village where men train cormorants to fish, rope end tied to sterns, another to necks so their beaks won't swallow the fish they catch. My father is one of those birds. He's the scarred man. And that last part, so it's like from a dream, and the last part is from a documentary. I don't know if you've seen Planet Earth. So there's this small clip of it's a village in China who trains cormorants to fish for them. So it's not in my village, but you can lie in your poem. So fuck it. Let's go to El Salvador now. And this is for my great-great-grandma who, if you read Marquez, like that was my upbringing. You know, I had my great-grandma in the house, my grandma and her mom, my mom and myself. So 5 generations in the same household. That's Salvadoran living, you know. And I believe she was indigenous, but we all didn't talk about it because in El Salvador, we don't claim that because we're very colonized. And so the language that nobody speaks is Nahuatl. And in Nahuatl, my grandma's name means truth, with her name is Nelly. Abuelita Nelly's garden with parakeets named Chepito, page 42. Abuelita's mother died when she was 1. No one talks about great-great-grandma or how Abuelita draws her eyebrows on at dawn. I saw them once when I pretended to snore. Abuelita's name should be Rocio because she wakes at 5 to water plants. Her name means truth in some language no one speaks. Grandpa says Abuelita burned the beans otra vez. Chepito IV dreams of tortillas when Grandpa swings in the hammock. Abuelita, pero why you don't have eyebrows? Sometimes Abuelita dries her bras on rose bushes. Doña Avalos thinks she grows the best roses, so when they walk to the market, their baskets bounce on opposite sides. I forgot to feed Chepito III for a week. I said the cat ate Chepito II, and when he became dough below my feet, I buried the first Chepito. Grandpa cuts our parakeet's wings and dips our moons in vodka. Truth is, before I drowned Chepito IV, I asked him if he remembered the eggshell he broke. Abuelita, will you forget the veins on the back of Grandpa's hands? And obviously I had a problem with killing animals, but it's a lie. Yeah. No, it's true. I killed. Didn't lie about that one, but it's because I miss my parents. And we'll go to this one. And again, in El Salvador, I'm from at the time, it was a very small coastal village, around 800 people. There were 2 roads, one with asphalt and the other one didn't. And in communities like that, you have your town drunks that everybody just accepts. So we had like around 5 or 8. And one of them was called La Belleza, in Spanish means the beauty. And it was because he never wore a shirt. And he was ripped for some reason. I don't fucking know what he did. But he always stopped in front of my house and I would run and give him water. So that's what started this poem. And he had this saying, and it's called, he used to say, ponele queso, icho. And that means like put cheese on it, which I never knew what the fuck that meant. So, so this is a poem trying to figure that out. And it's La Belleza talking to like 6-year-old me. And his real name is Miguel Alcantara, who's now passed away. So honoring my difuntos. Ponele queso means put cheese on it, kid. Page 46. Why you post on my fence and wait for water, belleza? You don't know? I'm Rambo. Look at these muscles. They shine like desk. Va, come silvestre calón. It's pronounced silvestre. Tre belleza. Silvestre Stallone. Come mierda, bicho. I made the best desk. I had a shop. Ponele queso. Every night, I cut where branch meets trunk. When you gonna make me a desk then? I made desk. Ponele queso. You know what that means? When I die, my phrase is gonna be on TV. It'd be like Silvestre in that movie Cobra. He'll try to figure what that shit means. Puta, bicho, I'll be famous. It's Silvestre, belleza. And yes, I know what it means. What it mean then? Sounds like those maces with the cheese in the middle and a rat outside. Bah, 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 bah. You do use that coconut. I knew you were your father. You knew my father? Don't touch the tiger's balls. I made the smoothest desk. Ponele queso. It's all in the smell, bicho. Did my father say that? You're touching the balls. You're touching the balls. But look, it's something like when you go to the store and vodka is 2 colones, right? Right. The label says 80 proof, but rubbing alcohol is 1 colon, 200 proof. So I wait for you to bring me water. What does that mean? Look, I was passed out when he got in that van. He had a backpack. You were asleep. He didn't want to go, but the dólares en war, bicho. Ponele queso, and the rat won't leave. So he actually did that shit. He fucked my grandpa up. So, like, once you get to that point, you get rubbing alcohol and literally mix it with water because nothing else does it for you. And my grandpa was not at that point. And so he gave it to my grandpa and he automatically threw up. It was funny. So from El Salvador, let's go to here. No, let's go to Mexico. Cassette tape. Yeah, you like that one? I've actually never read it out loud. Thank you. So if you... It's on page 13, so it's framed like a cassette, and I hopefully you know what a cassette tape looks like. And there's a side A, side B, and you can fast forward or pause. And they'll sometimes they get scratched up, so that's why the scratches are like that too. Cassette tape. A. To cross Mexico, we're packed in boats, 20 aboard. 18 hours straight to Oaxaca. Vomit and gasoline keep us up. At 5 a.m., we get to shore. We run to the trucks. Cops rob us down the road. Without handcuffs, our guide gets in their Ford, and we know it's all been planned. Not one peso left, so we get desperate. Diosito, forgive us for hiding in trailers. We sleep in Nogales till our third try, when finally I meet Papa Javi. Fast forward. Mama, you left me. Papa, you left me. Abuelos, I left you. Tías, I left you. Cousins, I'm here. Cousins, I left you. Tías, abuelos, we'll be back soon. Mama, let's return. Papa, ¿por qué? Mama, marry for papers. Papa, marry for papers. Tías, abuelos, cousins, be careful. I won't marry for papers. I won't be back soon. I can't vote anywhere. I will etch visas on toilet paper and throw them from a lighthouse. Rewind. When I saw the coyote, I didn't want to go, but parents had already paid. I want to pour their sweat each step they took and braid a rope. I want that cord to swing us back to our terracotta roof. No, I wanted to sleep in my parents' apartment. Side B. You don't need more than food, a roof, and clothes on your back. I'd add mom's warmth, the need for war to stop. Too many dead cops. Too many tattooed dead. Does my country need more of us to flee with nothing but a bag? Corrupt cops shoot gangsters from armored cars. Javiercito, parents say, will stand for you soon. Fast forward. Last night, Mom wanted to listen to Lulu's mother, a song she plays for the baby she babysits. "I don't know why this song gets to me," she said. Then, "Ah, Lulu, Lulu, don't you cry. Mama won't go away. Ah, Lulu, Lulu, don't you cry. Papa won't go away." It's mostly other nannies in the class. "It's supposed to help with the baby's speech development," she says. "Mijo, sorry for leaving. I wish I could have taken you to music classes." She reached over, crying. "Mom, you can sing to me now," was all I could say. "You can sing to me now." Thank you. Tearjerker, huh? From there. I never read that out loud, so now I'm all shook. I know that singing gets to you, right? That's what it was, like that lullaby. You know, it gets to you. All right, we'll go. Second attempt crossing. And this one's for another difunto who I wouldn't be here without. And I only knew him by Chino. I don't know his name. I don't know his last name. But I know that he passed away. And so I thank him. Second attempt crossing. And again, before, there's a lot of dehumanization that goes on for the Salvadoran body in the U.S. media and world media, that we don't realize that gangsters are human beings también, and that they're just children who never got the love that they wanted, and that's why they join this thing. So think about their humanity as well, regardless of what you hear in the media from the president. Second attempt crossing. In the middle of that desert that didn't look like sand, and sand only. In the middle of those acacias, whiptails, and coyotes, someone yelled, "La migra," and everyone ran. In that dried creek where 40 of us slept, we turned to each other, and you flew from my side in the dirt. Black-throated sparrows and dawn hitting the tops of mezquites. Against a herd of legs, you sprinted back toward me. I jumped on your shoulders, and we ran from the white trucks, then their guns. I said, "Freeze, Chino. Para, por favor." So I wouldn't touch their legs that kicked you. You pushed me under your chest, and I've never thanked you. Beautiful Chino. The only name I know to call you by. Farewell, your tattooed chest. The M, the S, the 13. Farewell, the phone number you gave me when you went east to Virginia and I went west to San Francisco. You called twice a month. Then your cousin said the gang you ran from in San Salvador found you in Alexandria. Farewell, your brown arms that shielded me then, that shield me now from La Migra. And let's see, I read three more. Let me try again, page 61. And this is about the first time. So the second time we got rounded up by immigration, the first time we ran out of water. And this is about running out of water. And this is a true story. There was a rancher who was white who gave us water, but then detained us at gunpoint till immigration came. Let me try again. I could bore you with the sunset, the way water tasted after so many days without it, the trees, the breed of dogs, but I can't say there were 40 people when we found the ranch with the thin white man, his dogs, and his shotgun. Until this 5 a.m., I couldn't remember there were only 5 or 7 people. We separated by the Palo Verdes. We meaning 4 people, not 40. The rest, I don't know. They weren't there when the thin white man let us drink from a hose while pointing his shotgun. In Pocho Spanish, he told us, "Si correr perros atacar." If run dogs, trained attack. When La Migra arrived, an officer, who probably called himself Hispanic at best, not Mexicano like we called him, said, "Buenas noches," and gave us pan dulce y chocolate. Procedure says he should have taken us back to the station, checked our fingerprints, etc. He must have remembered his family over the border, or the border coming over them, because he drove us to the border and told us, "Next time, rest at least 5 days. Don't trust anyone calling themselves coyotes. Bring more tortillas, sardines, alhambra." He knew we would try again and again, like everyone does. And I think 2 more. And then we'll open up. And this is... No, I won't read that one. Vows. So what people also don't understand, you know, with all this rhetoric around immigration, is that everybody assumes that there's a path towards citizenship, that it's easy, that you just come to this country and then, like, why don't they just become legal? We can't, yo. But the only way that most of us have to pursue citizenship is to marry a citizen. And this poem talks about the hurt that has caused me and why I choose not to get married. And it's called Vows. Ever since a brown girl wanted $15,000 from me to marry her, I vowed to not sign documents to get a visa. Then asked myself why I've let that hurt me so much to never buy rings. Amor, tell me to shut up. Tell me none of that matters. Come watch the tide drain south to where the house I left is lined with glass and barbed wire. When I call abuelos, "Ay no, mijo, someone else is dead." Then they ask about you. I'm 4 years older than them when they got married, 6 years older than my parents. Always they ask when I'll visit. Soon, abuelos, soon. What I mean is, I can never go back. Amor, no more than I love you. Quite possibly, I love that bay at low tide. Even possibly, mangrove roots with bright orange crabs. You can't know what it's like to have that place disappear. Those brown waves, those bright orange crabs. What I really mean when I say I can never go back is I wish to lie next to you every morning, where we dive head first to know what it's like to swim in the middle of love and see each gull flee like clothes, bouncing off the wall to the carpet we must pick clean like a beach after hurricanes. And I'll end with this poem that I wrote during a very dramatic and dark time when I used to think that, well, shit, if I don't get papers, the only way that I might return to my homeland is in a coffin. And sadly, that's how a lot of immigrants return to their homeland. So this is, I imagine that happening. And this is instructions for my funeral. Like, legit, I want people to do this at my funeral. Y'all are invited. Bring gin. And at the end, there's a lot of Spanish. It's just flowers. And Estero de Jaltepec is the bay where I grew up. And como tú is a poem by Roque Dalton that I have tattooed on me, and I wouldn't be a writer without Roque Dalton. He's Salvadoran. If you don't know his work, get at it. And thank you for listening. I'm going to take questions after. Instructions for my funeral. Don't burn me in no steel furnace. Burn me in abuelita's garden. Wrap me in blue, white, and blue. A la mierda, patriotismo. Douse me in the cheapest gin. Whatever you do, don't judge my home. Cut my bones with a machete till I'm fine as dust. Wrap my pito in panties so I dream of pisar. Please, no priests, no crosses, no flowers. Steal a flask and stash me inside. Blast music, dress to impress. Please be drunk, miss work, y pisen otra vez. Bust out the drums, the army strums. Bust out the guitars, guerrillero strummed, and listen to the war inside. Please, no American mierdas. Carouse the procession dancing to the pier. Moor me in a motorboat, de veras que sea una lancha, driven by a 9-year-old son of a fisherman. Scud to the center of the Estero de Jaltepec. Read como tú and toss pieces of bread. As the motorboat circles, open the flask so I'm breathed like a jacaranda, like a flor de mayo, like an alcatraz. Then forget me and let me drift. Gracias. So, any question about anything?
What kind of what?
Struggles.
Struggles? Being a Latino poet?
Well, being a minority in the poetry world has been tough until recently. And right now, like, white editors are realizing that there's a lot of us and there's a need for poetry by writers of color. So I think I've been lucky than the generation before me and the generation before then to be at such a political moment. And like Ta-Nehisi Coates talks about this as well. Like during the 8 years of Obama, there was this renaissance almost of black writers that took the stage, himself being one of them. And I think that happened in poetry, myself being one of those. But it's also, I've been, like, my career in politics has been doing this a lot. Like, the day that the book dropped, Trump announced that he was going to stop DACA. So, you know, I didn't plan for that shit. So, but in a weird way, the news has also put my poetry like in front, whether there's a shit ton of other writers who are more deserving, you know, than me. But there's this weird fascination of trauma and hurt in American letters and artistry. It's like you want to consume it, but not do anything about it. So hopefully you do something about it after listening to my work. You should call your representatives. You can tell them to, you know, do not discontinue DACA, to do not discontinue TPS, which is another status that not a lot of people know about, temporal protective status. And that's what a lot of Salvadorans have. And we're not as vocal because it's our parents who are not educated who got that status, which is also on the chopping block come December. And you can literally call your representatives because there's a huge letter in Congress right now that if Trump or when Trump discontinues it, they're going to have all these signatures in front of, like, to bypass whatever he says so they don't discontinue this status, which would affect another 1 million people, you know? So, yeah, just don't consume. Do something. And so, yeah, I've had it easier than most. I would say that. TPS or TPS, temporal protective status. And it's a status given after usually a catastrophe happens, like the Sudanese have it because of the genocide that happened over there. Somalis have it because of a drought. Haitians have it after the earthquake. El Salvadorans have it because we had an earthquake back in 2001. And Hondurans have it because of a hurricane. And Trump already discontinued Haitians and the Sudanese ones. Figure, you know, the darker skin color. And now Hondurans and Salvadorans are up next. We will know by December. My status expires in March. So I will be undocumented again come March if Trump discontinues it. Yeah.
So you're
no, TPS. TPS. Yeah. Yeah.
So what is poetry for you?
What is it?
Yeah.
It started being just a way to let my anger out, like, which is like, my teachers will hate me for saying this, but it was just a way to like put my feelings and thoughts on paper. Because as an undocumented person at the time, I felt like I couldn't tell anybody else what my status was. And this is back in 2007, 2008, where not a lot of people were out of the shadows yet. You know, so that was a healing process. But now it's become more of a way to distance the trauma away from me, kind of like clay. You know, you put it out on this thing and then you mold it until you try to make something beautiful. But what I found out, so I hadn't returned to Tucson since I immigrated here. You know, I crossed through Nogales. I went back last week and I couldn't sleep. I was there for 4 days. I slept 6 hours the entire time. And that's trauma. You know, my body still feels that trauma. It was the weather. It was like, I don't know, that you didn't let me sleep. And so I haven't healed. So poetry is not the answer. You still need counseling or to do other shit, you know, to do that. So that was like a wake up call. Like, yo, you know, you can write, you can be an artist, but you're still fucked up inside.
Can you tell us a little bit more about your work with Undocumented Poets and the relationship between your poetry and your activism?
So about that, like, again, talk about Barnes & Noble or like Amazon are run by straight men, white men. And I think, again, it's like those instances of all we did, all me, Loma, and Marcelo did, like literally all we did was email people. That's it. It's not even that big activism, you know? It's not like we sat down in the calling center. All we did is very easy. But of course, Barnes & Noble was like, oh my God, you're like doing this wonderful thing. They had no idea what the fuck we were doing. And they didn't give us money. They just invited us to a fancy ass dinner. And then they didn't even pay us for anything. And on top of that, it was like a fundraiser. So they were getting money. So yeah, that's me talking shit. I don't know, it's kind of going video, but whatever. So I see, like, I have friends who are actual, well, not, I guess as a form of activism too, but actual activists who are out on the street. And so that to me is harder work, and it's intense work, and it's draining work. For me, in poetry, I thought that poetry was like the vanguard, like it is in Latin America, of political thought, where I thought that that my citizenship wouldn't be an issue. And so when I saw it in the contest, I guess I don't give a shit, so I still submitted to them. But I know, like, Marcelo didn't. He saw that and he was like, I can't submit to this. And so a lot of people have done that. So all we did was write to people and like, hey, yo, this is fucked up. Can you change it? A lot of them were like, oh my God, like, we didn't realize that it was there. Like, how the fuck do you not realize? It's in your fucking guidelines. So they changed it real fast. I think there was around that time, there were around 12 contests. 7 of them changed them real quick. The other ones were like, well, you know, American is in this contest, like the word American. So I don't think we can take this, we can change this. And then we went public. Once we went public, they looked like dumbasses because a lot of people had already changed it and it was easy. And then they went out publicly, but like they got another poet who, you can probably figure out who this organization is. They got another poet to like say, well, yeah, you know, to write like this beautiful thing, pretending like they had been like allies all along when they weren't. But yeah, that's it. And now Amazon has also given us money to create this scholarship. The call just got put out yesterday. So if you have undocumented friends or previously undocumented friends who are writing poetry, tell them to submit to this contest. It's run through Sibling Rivalry Press, and just Google like Undocumented Poet Scholarship, and you get money for writing poetry, and you can use it however the fuck you want. Yeah. And yeah, so submit. I think the deadline is December, like January 1st or something. So that's what we do. And we hope that, so Amazon has given us a 5-year grant. If we show that a lot of people are applying, they're gonna extend it and increase the money. So please tell people to submit to that. Yeah.
Yeah. We have a book. Would this book translate in Spanish?
It's in the works. Yeah. So a lot of the poems here have been published in El Salvador. If you're Salvi, and you should follow elfaro.net. Elfaro.net was the first online newspaper in all of Latin America, and it's still doing work, and not good enough work that the government has put death threats on their editors. So this is real shit, because they talk about how the police there are murdering innocent people with the excuse that they're gangsters. You know, they have no gang ties, but they just go into your home, and, you know, rights are different there. And the police can just come into your home without a warrant and take you out just because you have a tattoo or they suspect that you're a gangster.
You have a poem about that.
Yeah, yeah. So that poem was published in El Salvador in Spanish, in much longer version. Yeah, yeah.
When will the Spanish version of this come out?
Probably like in 2 years. So yeah, it takes a while. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Another.
What are some things that you're working on now in your poetry
or writing in general? There's still a lot of gaps in this, and it's because like my memory didn't allow me, or I couldn't remember. But now I've been trying to write prose, so it might be a memoir, it might be another poetry book, I don't fucking know. But I'm trying to take this kid, this voice of a 9-year-old, and go day by day until he gets to this country, and talk about what happens in Mexico and Guatemala, which is more horrendous than what happens at the US-Mexico border. You know, a lot of more immigrants die in Mexico than they do, you know, crossing the US-Mexico border. So that's what I'm working on. I have like 5 pages done, you know, but like that's the idea. You know, and it's cool again to go back to that 18-year-old self where I never thought that I was gonna publish a book. I might never publish a book again. You know, I don't know if it's gonna be any good, the next one that I'm working on, but it's good to try new shit again and have fun with it, which you should always have fun first instead of thinking about where you're gonna publish or whatever. Like, that shouldn't be a factor, that shouldn't be into it. Yeah. It should be for you.
When did you start doing spoken word?
Like in college. So I started writing, you know, there's, now that distinction is so fluid now, you know, you might call what I used to spoken word, you might just call it poetry, and I think it's okay to call it both now. And so I actually did some slams in when I was an undergrad, like 3 only. But there's always, is there like a slam group here?
Yeah.
Yeah, so those are always like good community, like good places to fucking like practice. I believe in performing and reading your work out loud. And it matters. Like, it's part of the editing process, the revision process. Because if your crowd is not vibing, that means your shit's whack, you know? Or if you were going, like if in my mind I wanted you to laugh at something and you're not doing it, maybe you should rework that, you know, that stanza or something. Yeah. But there are, like, I have tear jerkers when I don't expect you to do anything but cry. Yeah. So you have to know what type of poem you're writing. And yeah, so college.
If now or at any time in your life you were not a full-time writer, how do you create time to write?
I haven't until, like, I have this fancy fellowship now where, you know, in New York, I would write at night because, like, I had a fellowship there too, but I still had to work. I had to teach. And I lived in a very not pleasant part of town. It was, like, right under the subway. So I couldn't sleep. So I slept during the day, and I would write at night because it was quieter than usual hours. So I would carve time and, like, rearrange my day around my writing, which is harder. It's harder to do for some people, but if you love that shit, you would carve out time. You know, there are stories of, like, Toni Morrison waking up really early in the morning. You know, 20 minutes every day becomes, like, days, you know, if you put it all together. So there's that. And now that I have this fancy fellowship, which is almost done, which now I'm fucking freaking out about. But the first year, it was weird because it was the first time that I could treat my writing as work. And in a way that takes some magic away from poetry, because then it adds another pressure to it. Like, shit, if this is work, then where the fuck am I going and where is it taking me? Which you shouldn't ask those questions, because it's art, you know? Right now, there's a lot of careerism conflating with poetry, and it's because of the MFA, PhDs, whatever, which I think it has been good in some ways, and it also has been bad. You know, you just have to analyze what is good and what is bad and how it could better benefit you. You know, I wouldn't recommend going to an MFA if you have to go into debt. That should never be an option, you know, but yeah, just managing your schedule. And if you really love it, you're going to do it, whether you get published or not. And then it's also asking that question, do I love this? Do I love this? Do I love what I'm doing? Which is not only for poetry. You should ask that question about any career that you pursue. If you don't love it, you're going to be unhappy. And you're going to be amargado and shit. And nobody wants to be around you. Happiness. Not a lot of people talk about happiness. Happiness should be crucial and number one.
Another question, last question. You said you, like, always read your poetry out loud, but you said that was your first time
to myself.
Is that true?
Yeah.
How did it feel?
That song got me, you know. I remember being in the car with my mom listening to that song and her crying. So it's just like remembering things. So I think maybe that's why I haven't read that one out loud. But when I say I read it to myself in my room, you know, that's part of the process. I may look weird to, like, people that walk in, but yeah, I read it out loud. Yeah. Last question.
It really struck me how you consider poetry. Like you said, it was like the political vanguard in El Salvador, like art, for example. My question is, because it seems like, you know, there's conflation of activism and poetry, like activism, art, like explicitism. So I guess my question about it really is that inside it's really, maybe you say, consumerist and capitalistic, right? Like you're kind of fighting an uphill battle for this art to have a political effect. I don't even say maybe even a Sisyphean task. And my question is that you're talking about art in terms of like careerism, you know, in terms of it having effect. My question is, like, does the activist, I guess, side, like the activist in you, the political activist, does it fight with the artist at all? Because it seems like your poetry kind of has, like, some, like, there's a clear moral at the end. There's, like, you know, there's something that you want the reader to do with the poetry, at least I'm taking. So I guess, yeah, my question is, does the activist fight with the artist?
Yeah, and it's a question of American poetry, which is different than any other poetry in any other country in the world. Like my hero, and if there's even in the left, so I'll answer it like this. Roque Dalton, who's my hero, and Pablo Neruda, who's also my hero. Roque, they're both leftists. They're both Marxists, or communists and Marxists. And there's a difference there. They hated each other. Roque Dalton would criticize Pablo Neruda because Pablo Neruda had made a career out of poetry. You know, exhibit A. because he was an ambassador to Chile, and he would represent as a poet, which is kind of dope. But to Roque Dalton, Pablo Neruda had given in to the bourgeois, the bourgeoisie, because he had lived in a fancy house. He had a chauffeur, you know, he liked the good things in life. And poetry got him there. But Pablo Neruda would say, well, you still need representatives this up high in government to represent us, and poets, etc. So that was his counter to Roque d'Arton. Roque d'Arton was super vanguard that he died because he believed that a poet, that the page was not enough. Like, even if you're a political poet, that is not enough. Even if you're a politician, it's not enough. That he literally took up arms, and he was that Salvadoran communist agent to Cuba, who then was sent back. He went to training in Cuba, and then he came back to El Salvador to start a revolution. And then his own people killed him. But he actually, like, he was an armed guerrilla. So there's those two. And now, outside of that, there's this undocumented writer, Fabiana Rodriguez, who talks about art in this way, that in order for art to make a change, think of it as a triangle, right? You have your artists and you have the people on the street, right? The people on the street need the artists to document what is happening and to create artwork that would impact other people to join the street. But if you only do that, you're gonna get tired and nobody's gonna give a shit. So what do you need? You need to also have allies up this pyramid. And what is the goal? To change the law. If you change the law, people are not gonna get tired and die just protesting. So you need people throughout all these three factions, and you need to mix them together, and that's how you make change. You know, so I think it's a mixture of everything. And yeah, as you can tell, I fight with that. Like, I'm still analyzing where the fuck I fit into that triangle. You know? And it's a lifelong question.